You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Front One.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, November 8th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Ryan Grimm of Huffington Post. What does the Senate look like now? What does the House look like now? What is the grand bargain looking like now? Will we get filibuster reform? How much more liberal is the Senate? How much more crazy is the House? And also, Ryan Grimm, an expert on drug laws in this country, will tell us how this is going to work out when you've got Colorado and Washington State with full legalization of marijuana and creating statutory structures in which to tax it, distribute it, et cetera, et cetera. And then my guess is the vast majority of the program is going to be more gloating about how much pain some of these conservative commentators and are in. Although, I'll probably get to other stuff. We've got a couple other stories, but I'm sorry. We all deserve a couple laughs. We've got a lot of work to do in the coming weeks and months. Well, years. Come on. Decades. And so we should enjoy this at the very least. In many respects, I have to say that watching these conservatives lose was one of my favorite parts about this entire election cycle. And so there's no reason not to enjoy it. And just to give you a sense of what we're going to be doing with this program in the coming weeks and months, we are, as you know, it has been a concern of mine, the grand bargain, for a long time. And we're going to try and provide for you the best context to understand what is happening and how it's happening, what the dynamics are in Washington, and also what the dynamics are with outside groups, and continue, obviously, to cover, and to the extent that we have any ability to do so, encourage outside people who are outside of the political system, or at least the two-party system, or at least that infrastructure, and how much pressure they're bringing to bear on our politics. We'll be doing other stories as well, and you know, we're going to endeavor to do sort of a broader range of issues. But and you can help in that regard in two ways. One is, of course, podcastawards.com. We are up for the People's Choice Award, which would be amazing to win, and the News and Politics Award, which would also be amazing to win. You can vote every day. They send you an email just to confirm you vote. You click it, you're done. It takes you not even 4 minutes. Some people have written in and said that I schedule, you know, I've got a Google calendar, I've got an iCalendar, whatever it is, and I schedule it, and it sends me an alert. It reminds me, I do it every day. it makes a big difference. How do I know that it makes a big difference? Because we have asked people to start taking our survey, which we will have a link up to on the blog, and we'll send it out in the next email blast. It is particularly important, whether you're a member or not a member, to take this survey. It's very helpful for us, both in terms of get a sense of what kind of things you want out of this program, and also gives us a sense of, like, you know, we don't have much money for marketing, frankly, to the extent that we have any at all to market. But I know through the survey that we got some people because of our podcast awards. I know that we should try Facebook ads. It will help us grow the show in the most efficient way possible. And so those two things, if you could.
Podcast awards, most importantly, because the voting for that ends November 15th. Our survey will be up long after that.
Yes. So if you're going to do one thing this week, podcast awards, you got 7 days to vote. I can assure you that all those other podcasts, they've got people who are voting every day. So if you can do it, please do it. Well, I know you can do it. Unless you don't have the ability to email, I mean, to click on a website. And if that's the case, there's no way you're listening to this. So you all are on the hook.
And let us know if you see any voter fraud from those other podcasts.
Yes. Don't make me throw a fit like we're going to play for you later in the show. It's going to be, it's just too hilarious. If we don't get this podcast awards. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to play some music from Decomposure, Blank Squirrel Records. You can find them at bandcamp.com. We got a link also on the site. What song are we going to play? This
Oh Brother.
Oh Brother. Now, remember, this is the guy who did that Pottersville. Amazing work. And so check it out. You get use Majority on bandcamp.com. You get 20% off the album, virtually free. Practically, the music's great. All right, we'll be back in a sec. Back, Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome to the program Ryan Grimm. He is the Washington Bureau Chief for the Huffington Post, also the author of the book "This Is Your Country on Drugs." Ryan,
increasingly relevant book,
indeed. Why don't we start there? Were you surprised? I mean, we have Colorado and Washington, right? Decriminalized. No, I mean, decriminalized doesn't even seem to be the right word, right? I mean, it seems
no,
to me
legalized.
They have legalized it. Medical marijuana has passed in Massachusetts, where marijuana has been decriminalized, at least in some amounts. This Washington, Colorado. Did you expect this? How stunning is this? Stunning?
Well, you can
stunning?
Call you can call me the Nate Silver of weed. Because I did say that Colorado and Washington would pass and Oregon would fail, and that was right. And Oregon had an insane legalization initiative on their ballot.
Let me just say one thing. Ryan made this prediction. But if you go to RyanGrimmIsHigh.com, in the weeks before, they tried to unskew your predictions. Is that not right?
That's right. They, They reduced the weight of young people and messed with the poll results, but you know, you can't skew what happened.
That's right.
But even in Oregon, it was written by crazy. So you had no limit on the amount that you could, you know, possess or sell, and the opposition is just able to have a field day with that, and it really galvanizes, you know, the establishment to attack it and makes people uncomfortable about supporting it. And they had very little money, which is related to the poorly written legislation. And yet they still got like 45%.
Wow.
So even that gets 45%. But yeah, it looked for a long time that like Washington and Colorado were going to pass. Arkansas was a sleeper. It almost passed. Wow. Arkansas. Medical marijuana almost passed in Arkansas. So Massachusetts passed a dispensary law, which means that you'll be able to buy pot in Boston, just like you'll soon be able to buy it in D.C. Wow. You know, walk into a shop with $20 and walk out with weed. This is, a new world. And it was combined with a bunch of decriminalization laws passed in Michigan. And in California, they dramatically reformed the three strikes. So it wasn't just weed. The entire criminal justice system was, dealt a blow.
What is the describe to us, to the extent that you can make similarities in terms of the coalitions that supported this. Who are the coalitions here? Because I imagine part of it is this notion of our drug laws are draconian. The drug war is a failure. There's other people, I think, mm-hmm. who give us a sense of that.
So in Colorado, actually, they finally have counted all the precincts now, and about 55,000 more people voted for weed than voted for Obama.
Wow.
So, it's the Democratic coalition plus some. And I think the ones who voted for Obama but against weed are probably your 70-year-old Democrats, 70 and above Democrats. We recently did a survey. We have a partnership with YouGov that does surveys, and we found even a majority of Republicans plurality of Republicans supported medical marijuana. That one is kind of has a huge coalition behind it. And even people over 60 for the first time in our poll supported medical marijuana. That was traditionally the place where it got crushed. But I think as it's becoming more pervasive, people over 60 are realizing that it's not a joke, that it's like they're not just using medical marijuana as an excuse to get all marijuana legalized, that it actually does, in fact, help with cancer and with other terminal illnesses and with just glaucoma or whatever. So
I would also imagine
that use it.
I would also imagine that those people who are over 60 now, they're different people than who are over 60
that's
four
a very,
years
That's
ago.
A very good point. They came up in the late 60s
absolutely.
As opposed to the early 60s.
Absolutely. Much different attitude towards drugs.
But even 70 and above, you're seeing movement, but not as much. You're very right. So that's why I think that's the last folks opposed to it.
So now here's the question that I have. I mean, certainly the federal President Obama certainly, it seemed to me, pursued the drug war with as much intensity as anybody. I mean, maybe you have a better sense of that, and I'm sure you
know
do.
What's that I think that's more or less true. But what's fascinating is that in 2010, the opponents of California's legalization scheme asked the Justice Department to come in and publicly oppose the initiative, and they did, and that hurt because people do trust the Department of Justice and Eric Holder, despite what you might hear on Fox News. Again, this time around, the DEA asked the Department of Justice to come into the state of Colorado, Washington, and publicly take a stand against these legalization initiatives, and very quietly Holder did not do it. In contrast to 2010, and I think that decision not to intervene is a very big deal, because that was a decision that was made. They sat around, they pondered the different possible scenarios, and they decided that it was in their best interest not to get on the wrong side of this.
Let me be a little bit cynical about this, because mm-hmm. California, they're not looking at there's less of a concern. California is so blue that there's less of a mm-hmm. concern yep. about what happens with congressional Democrats in California. So their cost benefit analysis is we're going to lose more. We're going to gain more by the administration is going to gain more in terms of image than they would lose in the context of the 2010 race. When you're talking about 2012, we don't want to drive any of our voters away. We want to encourage these people to come out because, you know, we're still at a net positive for people who wouldn't vote for Obama, like in a place like Colorado.
Right, but embedded in that analysis, which I agree with, is actually a shocking development, which is that the United States Justice Department thinks it's a bad political move to intervene in this marijuana issue, that they think it is the wrong political position to take to oppose marijuana. You know, that has never been the case in 75 years. You know, they've always thought that the political advantage was on the side of being tougher. Now that they're taking a clear-eyed look at it in a swing state and deciding that actually it benefits us to stay out of this, is a step. You know, they're not for it yet, but
right.
it's a step away from just, you know, blanket opposition.
So let me ask you this. So what happens with a state like Colorado, a state like Washington? They're starting to build some type of regulatory framework in which to regulate pot. I can't remember if it was Washington or Colorado, but it was like you 1 ounce is you're is perfectly legal, or so many liters of liquid pot or pot tea or something, and then, you know, so many pounds of pot brownies or something like that. They've figured out a system in which they're going to tax it. What do the feds do now? I mean, do they – what latitude does the federal government have to come in and say this isn't going to happen? Do they take them to court? How does this work?
Well, their legal and political space is different. You know, legally, they can come in to any medical marijuana or recreational marijuana shop that they want to and shut it down and arrest everybody in it and throw them in federal prison, no matter what the state laws are. But politically, you know, they face a public that's hostile to them doing that. So, you know, they're going to have to decide whether or not this is something they want to spend resources on. The pattern we've seen is that if a shop kind of loses the support of the community, let's say it serves a bunch of derelicts and becomes like just an eyesore for the community, like a bad bar in your neighborhood, the DEA then exploits that community resentment of the place and raids it, locks people up. But so as long as, you know, that's the difference between running a bad bar and a bad pot shop, mm-hmm. don't wind up in federal prison for running a lousy bar. So that's probably the way we'll see this play out. The towns and the businesses that are smart and responsible and work with their communities, the DEA will have to leave alone, because politically they won't have the opportunity. But if you get some giant warehouse of a place that everybody around it hates and the mayor's condemning it, then you might get the DA intervening.
Will we see any type of, any challenge by the state court to federal agents raiding a dispensary? In other words, you know, like, 'cause it seems to me that, particularly after the Affordable Care Act, and maybe I'm mm-hmm. completely off base with this, but it seems to me that their at least four of the justices in the past, or at least I know that one or two, Scalia in particular, have ruled that the Commerce Clause was the basis of the federal government's ability to outlaw, pot, right?
Right.
Isn't there an opportunity for a dispensary to pursue a court case? They've been shut down by the feds, and they're saying that, it's legal in this state. The feds have no authority here.
Well, that assumes that Scalia's decision-making comes down to, some type of a broad judicial philosophy rather than yes. morality and politics.
Well, I understand.
That's why he was able to, condemn medical marijuana, even though, and join the liberals in upholding the Commerce Clause when it came to pot, but not when it comes to health care for people. He's not a consistent thinker.
I understand that, but it's a lot more inconsistent to say the Commerce Clause applies, the Commerce Clause doesn't apply, and then say again the Commerce Clause applies.
Well, I think your problem would be that the four liberals would not want to hear the case because they're already, in retreat on the Commerce Clause, and they don't want to go any further back. And they'd be able to find one or two conservatives who don't want to deal with it for political reasons. And so I think it would get rejected for that reason. That's my armchair Supreme Court analysis.
You don't want to give the liberals are not going to want to give the conservatives another bite at the apple of the Commerce Clause, essentially.
I think that's right.
So
especially
right.
After the drubbing it took last time.
So as you are the Nate Silver of pot, what what happens now? I mean, over the next, let's say, 2 to 10 years, are we going to see more states that will pass either allow for medical marijuana or decriminalize or legalize it? And then where does this ultimately lead? I mean, is it just we have the federal government for, maybe at some point just basically says we're just going to stop prosecuting and stop chasing down marijuana cases, or what happens?
I think we will see more now that the danger would be that you'd lose some in a midterm, with a different electorate out.
Right.
Much older electorate out. 2016. Democrats would be smart to put them on in every swing state they can think of, to draw the youth vote out. Karl Rove's revenge. And then from there, for a long time, there's been a bill in Congress that would prevent the federal government from spending money raiding pot shops in states where it's legal. And that has always failed. I think it's up to maybe 160 votes or so by now. So that you'll see that one continue to gain momentum. And I think that will evolve into a bill that says, leave states alone that have any medical, any marijuana laws, whether it's medical or not. And if you could get some of these Tea Partiers to start joining in on the states' rights argument, I think this will go in a sense, it'll move a little like gay marriage did I think the days of Democrats being divided on medical marijuana are soon going to be behind us. Because you might think automatically that, you're Democrat, they're for medical marijuana. That's actually not the case. There are a lot who vote against it in Congress. I think what they saw on Tuesday will move them. So you're going to start out on that vote with the entire, give or take a few, Democratic caucus supporting medical marijuana and possibly, getting the federal government out of marijuana entirely. Then you only need, 50 or so, 25 to 50 Republicans to take you over the top. So I think by 2016, 2017, after a big election in 2016, you could conceivably see, unfettered, legalized, regulated pot in maybe half the states or so.
Wow.
A bunch of states will never do it.
Right.
You have dry counties now, and you'll continue to have dry counties, states. What would you call a state that doesn't have pot? It's not dry. What is it?
I don't know. Teetotaler. What is the opposite for the? What is the pot? I guess teetotaler still works. I mean, yes, I don't know if they call it tea anymore. But
let's go with that.
All right. Well, so let's now turn to let's get our faces out of the bong for a moment and turn our attention to what's happening on the Hill in terms of the fiscal cliff, the grand bargain. We're looking at a Senate now that is, well, I guess come January 20th or so, is going to be not substantially, but marked, well, I don't know how to phrase it, but slightly more to the left. Yes, I mean, the Democrats have picked up a couple of seats, but also have upgraded in those seats.
Yeah, that's right. So you kind of have a more polarized Congress. Republicans are not in good shape here. Sadly, the best thing that they have going for them, it's sad to say, is the debt ceiling will come around in, December, January, or maybe February. So they have the opportunity to threaten to drive the country into default and the globe into a financial crisis again. But that's the only lever they have. Democrats, meanwhile, have the Bush tax cuts as a huge lever. Because if they don't do anything, if Congress just doesn't act, which is a congressional specialty, then the tax cuts expire and taxes go up dramatically on the rich and they go up marginally on everybody else. And at the same time, tens of billions of cuts to the Pentagon go into effect. Nobody likes defense cuts in Congress because everybody has some defense contractors in their district, but Republicans dislike them more than Democrats. So they have a better hand for the first time. And Obama has said so many times that he's not going to buckle on these tax cuts for 250 and above that he's boxed himself into it. That if he does buckle, can never be trusted again.
Right. Nobody's going to vote for him the next time he runs for president.
Right. That's right. He'll never get a book deal.
Right. Well, okay. So we have this situation. Boehner came out yesterday, said he's open to new revenue, but essentially he's just basically saying, I'm open to what Mitt Romney suggested, right? Where he's saying, we'll get rid of, we'll cut taxes for everybody more, or retain the Bush tax cuts, which of course will create new revenue, which he can say because Senate Republicans got that congressional research document, pulled from the website, which said that cutting taxes for wealthy people does not create any economic growth. So they've been able to deal with that reality by right. ignoring it. And so he's just basically saying, close the loopholes, close the deductions, et cetera, et cetera. We have, on the other hand, Schumer had said, and President Obama, I think, have said essentially, no, that's not going to cut it. We're not going to, new revenues. We're not going to consider the idea of fantasy growth based upon tax cuts as new revenues. And we're not going to consider loopholes or closing loopholes are not enough for new revenues. So are we at loggerheads there? Because I know Peter Orszag suggests the other day in Bloomberg, well, the way you sweeten this is to cut Social Security. So what happens?
It's loggerheads. I think that Democrats will go over the cliff, if only to. And the reason to do it is that it's not like on January 2nd, all these cuts take immediate effect. These are cuts over a 10-year period. But on January 1st, the taxes go up. So that means the Senate can come back and then vote to recut taxes for people making 250 and below. And we saw what happened when they did that before. Republicans eventually caved because there's only so many times a politician wants to vote against cutting taxes for the middle class. So So then you're sitting there with the, you know, the Senate having passed these middle class tax cuts, and then the ball is in the House's court. They will try to go back to the Bush rates, but it's just, you know, the politics are not on their side.
So does there need to be a
Democrats can still lose? They could snatch defeat from this, you know, unquestionably.
Well, I mean, it seems to me it depends on really, you know, who's pushing what deal, because the same leverage that the administration say, or the Democrats say, could have in terms of forcing the Republicans to vote for these middle class tax cuts would also could also be applied to Democrats. Right. And so, in other words, if it is there's some type of omnibus package where debt ceiling goes up, taxes get cut for middle class, and Social Security gets changed to the CPI, let's say, what are the chances that it's going to be presented in that fashion? In other words, here's the entire package. You either vote up and down on it, or will they be able to break it out piecemeal?
I think there's a decent chance that it comes as a package.
And that's the biggest danger, isn't it, from people who don't want Social Security cut?
Yes. Yes. And that's where they're trying to, ram all these spending cuts through. Yeah. And that's going to be a problem. And it's fascinating to just kind of see how we got here. You know, like 2001, 2003, you know, Bush and his allies cut taxes by trillions. We then have two unpaid for wars. Then we have a financial crisis and a bailout. All of that leads to trillions of dollars in debt. Now they want to say we're going to pay off that debt by cutting Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And in Washington, that's called a grand bargain. It's kind of a Alice in Wonderland type of thing. Yes, that's where we are.
Give me a sense of what's happening in the House in terms of the Democratic leadership, because it seems to me that in the event that the House Democrats are faced with this bill that would the middle class tax cuts, the cuts to Social Security, and the raising of the debt ceiling, it seems to me that what will happen in the House is that there will be a substantial amount of Tea Partiers who say, we're just not going to go along with this. And Boehner's actually going to have to look to the Democrats to provide these votes. And again, the leverage is going to be, Democrats aren't going to want to vote against the middle class tax cut. How strong will the resistance be to cutting Social Security? In other words, what is the size of the caucus of people who will not vote for that middle class tax cut if it means cutting Social Security? And who do you anticipate, and how does this play with any type of leadership battles that are happening on the Democratic side?
I don't think it's a very big caucus. I think that I think Pelosi or Hoyer, whoever's speaker leader, would be able to come up with enough votes to do that chain CPI, which would, you know, cut Social Security. Now Barbara Lee's running for vice chair. She's, you know, going to be a progressive voice fighting against cuts. But I don't have a lot of faith that that House Democrats are going to save you. Pelosi was, you know, very much on the side of grand bargain, 2011, and she's not happy to do it, but it doesn't matter what your emotions are about it. You're like, she was willing to do it. She's said very kind things about Simpson-Bowles, which does, you know, bad things to Social Security. So,
and Hoyer is even more to the right on that.
He'd do it. He'd do it for sure. Question is whether or not Boehner, the Tea Party saved the country from a grand bargain last time.
Right.
And, you know, thank you, Tea Party, for that. That was the best thing that they've done by being so intransigent that it couldn't get done. So I think that's your best case scenario for Social Security, is that there's so many Republicans that refuse to do anything on taxes that the whole thing just blows up.
Right. And then we will see it all piecemeal. Right. I mean, because then we'll start to see I would imagine tax cut. Can the Senate initiate a tax cut bill for middle class tax cuts?
Let's see. That would be new revenue.
I mean, that's what it's going to come down to, right? I mean, it's because at that
point...
No,
they're not raising taxes, though. You can't just, they can't raise taxes, I'll have to ask somebody smarter about this, but I think that they could cut taxes.
Because it seems to me at that point...
They're not raising revenue.
Harry Reid could scuttle the whole thing.
They could also take a House bill that involves taxes and scratch it off.
So it seems to me that Harry Reid has the ability to scuttle the whole thing, right? I mean, in that case. Am I right about this? Mm-hmm. Because if there's a big package out there that involves all these sort of like grand bargain things and it creates pressure on Democrats to vote for these middle class tax cuts, if he has the ability to sort of have a standalone bill that involves cutting middle class taxes and maybe just, you know, raise the debt ceiling. I don't know if he has the ability to initiate that in the Senate either. But it seems to me that he has the ability at least to, create some type of poison pill or just, you know, crash that other bill.
Yeah, he definitely, is a huge player here.
And what do you think his sense is? I know he's come out yesterday and said, we're not touching Social Security. I know anecdotally anyways that he is very, strongly is a strong protector of Social Security. What's your sense?
I agree. Yeah, that's my sense too. He's kind of a new dealer in that sense, and particularly with Social Security. I think he'd do everything he could to protect Medicare and Medicaid benefits too. You wouldn't have thought, 5-10 years ago that Harry Reid would be progressive's best hope on this. But that's kind of the situation we find ourselves in.
And so what should we be looking for over the course? I mean, I imagine things are not going to happen during the lame duck session. Is that your sense as well?
I don't think so. I think we'll know in the next 2 or 3 weeks as the Republicans kind of sort out their own internal stuff. But I think this will be punted.
And so what should we be looking for? I mean, what should we be looking for people to set up? I mean, we see the Peter Orszag editorials. We see people talking about how anybody who was endorsed by Bull Simpson lost, Bulls is whatever their big pack was lost.
Right.
Everybody is sort of aligning and setting it up for this battle. What should we be looking at that's going to be that are going to be key is to tell us where people are lining up on this?
I mean, I think if you start seeing any talk of Republicans being willing to accept tax increases, that's huge. And if you don't see them talking about driving the country into default, that's also a big deal.
So we've got a hope for Republicans' craziness. So should we all be hitting the message boards right now and saying, Speaker Boehner, if you don't stand up to President Obama and his socialism, this is it for you. And I imagine,
right. And Mitch too, Mitch McConnell too, because he could get primaried in 2014.
Now I imagine there are people basically with the knives out for Boehner and McConnell in their own caucuses who are doing this very thing, right?
Oh, absolutely. They know it.
And who are those people that we should be looking at?
Well, I don't know the Kentucky scene well, but that's going to be a key place to look. I guess if you look in the Rand Paul world, the grassroots base that he has, can a credible primary opponent emerge on the right to McConnell? And if so, then he's not going to do anything. Because he wants to be majority leader, and you can't be majority leader if you're not in the Senate.
Right.
On the Boehner side, I think the big question is Cantor. Does Cantor decide he wants to help get the Tea Party under control and work with Boehner and kind of abandon these, for at least for the moment, these speaker ambitions, or does he seize this? So that I think that we'll see all that unfold in the next week or two.
All right. Well, we will look out for it. In the meantime, I'm going to call into Rush Limbaugh constantly and tell Rush that he's got to stop Cantor from Boehner from folding.
That's right. All right. And he will. He'll be on the warpath, I'm sure.
All right. Well, Ryan Grimm, thank you so much for laying this stuff out for us. And we will we look forward to you moving to Washington or Colorado anytime soon.
You got it. You know, up post Denver, we have an office there.
Oh, you do? There you go. I think
we
do. So much for the Washington bureau chief, folks.
That's right.
All right, Ryan, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, man.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
Yep.
There you go. He's definitely high. So there you have it, folks. Setting up this stuff now. Just more house cleaning tomorrow on the program. Cliff Schechter will join us. The Obama bot Andy Kindler will be here, I imagine, if he is not sort of like in an apoplectic frenzy. If we can even get him on the phone for any period of time, we'll find out. The show will not be live. We will pre-record it. As I have other duties I must attend to, and that is it. Now, what we're going to do in the should we play this clip? Can we play this clip before we go to the? Yeah, I got to do this.
You want to? We could do it if you want.
Yeah, we're going to play the clip. We're going to now. Look, now, folks. Here's the deal. For members, I'm going to include all 24 minutes of this rant at the end of the members podcast. We're going to play it now. I will tell you now, I know there are some people who listen to this show with their children. I know there are some people who listen to this show at work, either live or as a podcast. We're going to play something in just a moment that I find absolutely hilarious. And but he's also not safe for work at all. And it is a Republican who is very upset that all the work that she put into getting Romney elected, she would post stuff on Facebook and none of her followers would like it or did enough to support it. We will include this for members at the end of the podcast. And so before I tell you what we're going to do in the better half of the program and ask you to become a member at majority.fm, because we really desperately need your membership to maintain this show, I will say to you that if you don't want to hear something that's absolutely hilarious but full of swears, then now would be the time to end this show for yourself. If you're a member, you can come back in exactly 3.5 minutes. Is that what it is? 3.5 minutes will take you into the music. 4 minutes will take you into the music. Just skip over this. And at the end of the show, the member show, I will tell you that we're going to play it, and you'll skip over that part. It's just that funny. When we come back in the better half of the program, I'll take your calls and your IMs, but also amazing audio footage of a Republican poll watcher in Colorado whose name is Dayton Conway. I kid you not. Talking, reporting back to home base as to what he's seen, where he reports there was a lot of, what was it, colored people, minorities? What did he say?
Colored people.
Colored people at the poll. He thought it was suspicious. And he's interviewed by someone who catches him saying that, and you can hear how he explains why he thought it was suspicious. It's stunning. This is the party. Well, look, you know the drill. These people are just, I don't understand why we put Condi Rice on stage, said Rush Limbaugh yesterday. Yet we're the racists.
Herman Cain.
We will talk about that in the better half of the program. And a couple other stories. Don't forget podcastawards.com. We need your membership. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to play this audio. And so get ready. Not safe for work. Not safe for children's ears. Not safe maybe even if you're driving, because you may drive off the road. But here it is. This is the first 3 minutes of this thing. We'll put the 24 minutes for members. And here it is. And then we'll go into the end of the show.
All of the fucking bastards who have said over all of these years that Obama has to go, yet I can make 15 fucking posts on Facebook and not fucking one of you will share it with people who don't want to see it because you don't want to offend somebody.
Now, you understand that she's got this on a video camera, and occasionally she lifts the camera up to show the TV and her Facebook page. But here's why she says that you don't want to share it with anybody.
Well, how do you like it tonight? How do you like the fact that Obama won the fucking election? Is that settling well with you? It's not settling well with me. I have busted my ass. I have busted my ass over the last 4 years. I just got a computer 4 years ago, so excuse me. It took me about a year to teach myself how to properly use it. I had 220 videos on my first YouTube channel. I had, I think it was 200 videos and 220 subscribers, with almost a million views on all of those videos. Conservative videos that you people didn't share. Because you didn't want to offend people that might not agree with what you posted, yet you'd like what I posted, and some of you not even bother to do that. Figure out how to use the fucking internet or get the fuck off of it. This is such bullshit. And there, in the popular vote, on Drudge, Obama's about to go over Romney. Here, take a look, assholes. Look at your fucking work. Look at that. Look. Can you read those totals? Romney, 44,548,000. Obama, 44,332,000. Oh, it's getting close now. You suppose you'd like to share that with your friends that voted for Obama? I bet you wouldn't, you little pussies. God, I'm sick and tired of this shit. I spend hours upon hours upon hours mining the news and finding things to post for you to share with other people, and yet very little of you do it. Some of you do. I appreciate every one of you that do, and I'm not talking to you, so don't comment here. I'm talking to all you namby-pamby pussies who don't want to find your voice or put your voice out there. Get the fuck off the internet! You are of no use to anybody! Shut your fucking accounts down, shut your fucking mouths, fall in line and love socialist America, because that's what you got. You want to call me unhinged? I am. You'd be right. I am totally fucking unhinged right now. Look, it just got closer. Romney, 45,245,000. Obama, 45,029,000. Ooh, it's only within 20,000 now. So Romney isn't even going to get the popular vote. Fuck you! All you goddamn Ron Paul supporters, you Gary Johnson voting douchebags, kiss my ass!
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. The tears of the Republicans. That is, yeah. We've got more of these goodbye cruel world posts that we'll read in the better half of the program. But I don't know anything's going to top that. And she went on for 24 minutes. She recorded it. She, I don't know if she did any editing to it, but then she uploaded it to YouTube and she left it there, ladies and gentlemen.
She did a little bit of editing because there's one point where text comes up that says, yes, I smoke and I'm drinking butter shots and water with an occasional beer chaser tonight.
There you go. All right, folks. See you in the better half. 646-257-3920.